Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, all you dick diddlers, it's your old chum Kevin Goatee here, and boom, it's time for another episode, Gutting the Sacred Cow. I brought back one of my and your all-time favorites, and that, of course, is David the Producer, as he is going to try to debunk the myth that Say Anything is still a beloved film. Joining me again, this time in the co-host seat, is Ralph Sutton. Remember him? He did Wonder Woman, he did Avengers Endgame. Well, now he's going to ride shotgun and listen to David's argument why Say Anything should just shut up.
Gather round, here's what I know. It's just that this cow has got to go. I know some people kind of like it, yeah.
Now you can't leave. Guest co-host Ralph Sutton, name that film.
Well, that has got to be A Bronx Tale.
Yes, sir, it is. I guess that one was too easy, but here we go. Nonetheless, Kevin Goatee, welcome you to another episode of Gutting the Sacred Cow, the best movie review, movie debate podcast out there, where we invite guests to pick a film that they find overrated or hate and try to convince our guests to see their argument. But the film must meet one of these criteria: widely beloved, critically acclaimed, or a financial success. We welcome back probably one of the most hated, and I use that in quotes, gutters, because of you deciding, David LaFerre, again to join us. Thank you again. David has chosen many films that have irked our fans. Probably the one that everyone got pissed at the most for, Goonies would be number two, and Back to the Future would be number one.
Yes, it was a hard gutting, but I survived.
Did you?
Can I ask, do you exclusively focus on shitting on 80s movies, or do you expand out of the 80s genre?
You know, it's funny. It's just turned out that way. It's not meant that all 80s movies are bad, but the ones that I picked have been complete and utter horseshit.
David also thrown out there Dirty Dancing and Pirates of the Caribbean as well.
Well, Pirates of the Caribbean, I walked out of, so that's fine.
Wow. That sweet, sweet, bassy, dulcet tone voice you hear, none other than Ralph Sutton. Ralph, how goes it, my friend? How have you been?
Things are good, man. Working hard. Just came back from Barcelona, ran a half marathon out there, and got back a couple days ago.
He couldn't wait to shoehorn that in there, David LaFerre.
Yep.
You see that?
That's
wow,
right.
Man, overachiever.
That's been to Barcelona twice, did not do a half marathon. Just ate a lot of tapas and walked my ass off, saw a bullfight, and, you know, did all that fun.
Bullfights are illegal now in Barcelona. So
they are? Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, it was. Yeah, I saw a bullfight there when I was in high school, which was 94.
Now it's a mall. The thing is still up. The arena is still up, but it's a mall.
No kidding. I was last there in 2009, but not the bullfight part, obviously. David is keeping along his trek of deciding to destroy 80s films, choosing one that's near and dear to every Gen X gal's heart, Say Anything. A budget of $16 million back in 1989, a box office haul of $20.7 million. Turn that into 2023 money, $39.4 million budget, $50.9 million gross. Ralph Sutton, this did not make that much money.
Well, I don't think that matters as much on none of these things. I think it did so much better in back then VHSs. You know, right. That's when it really blew up. And iconic lines from the film, iconic scenes from the film, a lot of actors and directors starting from this film. It's hard to debate the cultural relevance of this film.
But does it hold up despite its cultural relevance?
As someone who just watched it yesterday, I would say absolutely.
Oh, we will find out.
Wow.
We're going to hear more about that. IMDb, gentlemen, as you both know, is a scale 1 through 10 with decimal points. David, what did IMDb score have for Say Anything?
Being that it's a Cameron Crowe film, which critics seem to love Cameron, I will go with 7.5.
And Ralph Sutton?
I'm going to say 7.2.
7.3.
Ooh.
Ralph takes this one by a pubic hair. Critics, Rotten Tomatoes score, as we know, again, gentlemen, 1 through 100. Ralph, what do the critics give Say Anything?
Well, I could cheat and pretend I don't know the answer to this one.
But you
I
know do. Will then let you sit this one out. Dave, David, the producer, what do you think the critics gave this?
I know critics adored this movie. I'm going to go 87.
98.
Yeah, I did a little research. 98%. I do know that.
Yeah. Ralph, do you know the audience score as well?
No, I don't know that. I just know the critic score was 98.
We'll go with you then, Ralph. What did the audience give Say
Anything? I'm going to say very close. I'm going to go with 95%.
David, the producer, without his sunglasses today, I guess he didn't pull anyone over. David.
I'm going to go 12%. No, I'll give it higher. I know it'll be higher. It'll be probably about 70%.
85.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
People love this film. Five fun facts. After learning the sport of the future, in quotes, for the movie, John Cusack continued training and has a level 6 black belt in Aikido-kan kickboxing, which sounds completely made up to me.
The guy he spars in the film ends up becoming somewhat of a famous kickboxer.
Don the Dragon Wilson.
Don the Dragon, yeah.
Yeah. Who also did a film, I forgot the name, but...
Bloodsport.
No, that's Frank Dukes and Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I think he's in one of those big ones. I forget what it is now, though.
It wasn't kickboxer with Jean-Claude Van Damme either. In 2014, fun fact number two, Fox gave the green light for producers to adapt the movie into a single camera sitcom that would take 10 years after the film's events, but apparently they did not bother to ask Cameron Crowe for the blessing. Once he found out about it, he tweeted his dismay about the project and said, quote, "I have no involvement except trying to stop it." Cusack also cried foul about the project. The backlash prevailed, and the project was canceled. This sounds to me as awful as that short-lived Ferris Bueller's Day Off TV show.
You know, it's funny that there's so many of these where they try to do that. The most interesting, though, is that there's only one successful TV show based on a TV commercial.
Would that be the Geico Caveman?
No, that would be Ted Lasso.
Oh, my God. I've completely forgot about that.
Yeah. How about that?
That's a fun fact, but not going to count for that. Want to take a guess on who was considered for the role of Lloyd Dobler? I'll give you two. One was a huge, actually, they're both were huge in the 80s. One pretty big in the 90s. And the other one who was not big in the 90s, huge in the 2000s, and still huge.
Is that up to David to guess?
It's for either of you to guess.
Well, I shouldn't have done all my research then.
Damn you, Ralph. Dave, the producer.
I came prepared.
You always do. Ralph. David, give me two names. Who auditioned for Lloyd Dobler?
Big in the 2000s. How about Brad Pitt?
How about Robert Downey Jr.?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And I really think you should say big in the 2010s.
And 10s.
Yeah.
And how about the 80s guy, 80s and 90s guy, who was also considered for the role? Huge in the 80s and 90s.
Huge in the 80s and 90s that would fit this part. Ooh, that's a tough one. Because they had to play somebody younger.
That never stopped anybody in Hollywood. You know that.
That's a good point. Good point. I couldn't even guess. I'm not sure who that could be.
Christian Slater.
Slater.
Mr. Gleaming the Cube himself? Number also consider for the role of Ione Skye. I want to take a stab at this one. Here's a hint. She pretty a little big in the 80s. 90s, not really. 2000s and 2010s, sized popularity.
Take a shot, Ralph. I got nothing.
Oh, I think I saw this. Is it the Flashdance chick? No, I forget who
Jennifer
it is.
Jennifer Beals, it is not.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was. Okay, then I don't know who it is.
The answer is, and guys, you're lying if you don't still beat off to her, Jennifer Connelly.
Oh. Jennifer Connelly.
I knew it was a Jennifer. I just forgot which one it was. That's all.
Boy, she say Leah Thompson, possibly.
Not a, but... not a bad guess, but a wrong one nonetheless. The number four, the studio had little faith or interest in the movie until Siskel and Ebert gave it two thumbs, quote, way up.
See that.
It's about time the studios get it right.
There's that snarkiness I love. Number five, I gave her my heart and she gave me a pen was voted 73 out of the 100 greatest movie lines by Premiere Magazine in 2007. I say, God, are they dragging the bottom of the barrel for quotes, because I don't remember that line and I'm a movie snob slash nerd. No one has ever uttered that line in the last 25 years, fellas. Have you heard that?
I clearly remembered the line because also the pen has significance in the movie.
Yep.
It shows up again at the end.
Yep.
But the quote that I remember better than that is the kid saying, bitches, man. That was one of my favorite lines ever.
Yeah, the kid. And of course, we'll go right to quotes because Ralph kind of segued in perfectly to that one. And following up on that same moment, if you all know so much about women, why are you here? By choice. That one is the one we all know. And of course, kickboxing, the sport of the future, which I forgot about it until I saw the scene and go, oh, yeah, people try that out for a hot second, kind of like a Wayne's World-ish quote.
I
mean, here and there.
Argue he was right. UFC kind of is an offshoot of that. So I see there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, don't forget the 1990 film we alluded to earlier, Kickboxer, came out a year later.
Right. Yeah, okay. I agree with all that.
David, the producer, any quotes jump out at you?
This movie is so unquotable. You did steal my kickboxing sport of the future. That's the only one I could come up with. And Bitches Man is, I will say, arguably the only funny thing in that movie.
Wow.
It's a good line. It's a good line.
Not, coming
it,
well.
It is a good line.
Ralph, any other quotes that we did not cover?
I mean, the one that you said is the one that stuck out to me. I remembered that line without seeing the movie again. So that's something. The I gave her my heart, she gave me a pen. That, I mean, I remember that. So that to me is something that stuck with me for, God damn it, is it 30 something years the movie came out? 89. That is
34 almost. 34
yeah. That's crazy.
Isn't that nuts? I argue 1989 best year for films. Without getting into it, I'll give you the 10 off my head. Major League, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Batman, Field of Dreams, Karate Kid 3, you can argue. Nightmare on Elm Street 5.
You can't argue that being a good movie.
No, those are a few that jump out at me right off the top of my head.
I would say 99 is the best one. Matrix.
People argue that. I'll give. Oh, Lethal Weapon 2. Yep. Yeah. Sixth Sense stinks. It does not hold
Magnolia,
up.
Magnolia.
No.
There's so many good movies.
American Pie, I'll throw in there. I like American Pie a lot. Matrix, I agree. But I say 89.
Sixth Sense is one of those unfortunate movies that you can only watch once.
Yeah, it's a one. There's
no watchability.
I will watch The Matrix when it comes on, no matter
what. 100%.
I'll watch that.
That's a top 10 for me right there, guys. Also done his very podcast by Don Jameson. Attempted by, I should say. Don also attempting Die Hard. So he's up there with you, David, on the Mount Rushmore of Don Quixote attempts. Let's just call it that.
Yeah.
Let's go right where the audience wants to get out on the fun. And you know what time that is, fellas. It's Ask a Gutter. At Bango 2331, yet another movie from the 80s that I have yet to see. All right. Not a question. Obviously a statement. At Lord Snurts, that is for our next one. At Behind the Rants, that's from Zyphos. Kickboxing is really the sport of the future. Are the guys at the Gas and Sip actually right?
Are they right? I wouldn't have taken their advice. The advice was absolutely awful. Right. They weren't right, but they were teenage kids. What were they going to tell them?
Right. And at Delvin Cox, why does Beyond the Rant hate the 80s so much? This is clearly a grudge against anything that was made in the 80s, including me.
It was my prime time. All the good movies that I actually do like do come from the 80s and 90s. So, you know, I just happened to pick the shitty ones.
I'm old enough. I saw this in the theaters. You know, I'm 53. So this was like right in my wheelhouse. I was 19 years old when this movie came out. This was right up my... I was in high school at the time.
Right. And you remember liking it then?
Loved it then. Watching it back now, there's a couple of things that I thought were kind of silly.
But we'll get into it. We'll get into that
we'll
part.
We'll get into it.
Yeah, we'll get into it. This was like, so I'm the youngest. This came out when I was 12, about to turn 13. So this was the this is the turning of the corner for young Kevin Goatee in his maturation, or should I say immaturity years. At Lord Snurts, are the parodies of this famous scene, and that of course being Cusack holding up the boombox, more entertaining than the actual movie?
Answer, short, yes, by far.
At Taco Shirt, oh, sorry, go ahead, Ralph.
I will say that shocked me is how in remembering that scene so vividly, how short it was in the movie. It's fucking 4 seconds at most. And how much that stuck with the zeitgeist of humanity since then says something about that scene, because I didn't know how it was. It really is an insignificant scene in the movie. But boy, did that speak volumes at the time.
I give that credit to the song, not the scene, because that song just, it blew up. It was huge everywhere on radio. And it's actually a great song, but it got overplayed. And after a while, I really started to not listen to that song.
I'll defer to the former strip club radio DJ, Ralph. Did that come out then, or was it out before?
It came out a little bit before then, and it wasn't going to be that originally, but they ended up using that song. It was going to be a Billy Idol song, I think. And by the way, if you've never heard it, there's a cover acoustic by a guy named Jeffrey Gaines that's fucking unbelievable. Even if you think you've gotten sick of the song, look up the Jeffrey Gaines version of it. It will make you like the song again.
No kidding. All right. Well, there you go.
I am jotting that down.
Yeah. It's the acoustic live version by Jeffrey Gaines. Guaranteed it will make you like the song again.
Awesome.
At So Wizard Podcast, for David the producer, what song would you play on a boombox on your true love's lawn? So would that be the lovely Juliet's lawn? Would you play that for her?
Cherry Pie.
I have my answer, Ralph.
How about I want to fuck you like an animal by Nine Inch Nails closer.
That's a good one. What did I write down here? I have it somewhere here. God damn it, it's in my notes. I'll get to that later. I'll come in the notes section. Oh, I have written down, how about Pop That Pussy by Two Live Crew?
That's nice.
That was my wedding song,
wasn't it? I mean, look, it was either that or Table Dance, but I thought that was too uncouth for a PG-13 film.
I don't want no small dick, man. I'll do that one instead. Right?
Next one, let's see. Oh, last one, at Taco Shirt Krillin. Even if you hate the movie Say Anything, have you ever heard of the band Say Anything?
No.
There is a tribute band in Chicago that does 80s music that is their name. And I'm sure there's many around the country.
A late entrant at Bjorn Viking, Ken Bjorn Turner. Do you think they had to do the radio scene in one take? There is no way John Cusack's spindly arms can hold an 80s boombox for more than two takes. I mean, that thing probably has at least 6 D cell batteries, maybe 8.
Well, being that I saw the movie just yesterday and the scene's only 4 seconds, I don't think it was that hard to do.
His arms quivering because of those D batteries. And that's like a Radio Raheem boombox from oh my God, Do the Right Thing, I think, right?
He was probably shaking like in the sex scene.
That is discussed in my notes, so I'm sure you're going to do that too. And that's going to close it for Ask a Gutter. And hey, everybody, no one listens to podcasts, end of podcasts, so let's get the plugs in now. David, the producer, what would you like to talk about and share on this fine stage of ours?
Sure. You can find Juliet's podcast at theunwritablerant.com. Very simple.
To the point. Succinct. Love it. Ralph, you have a phone book worth of plugs, I'm sure.
I'll do my best. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My two podcasts, one's called The STR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. I do that with Big J Okerson. Comes out twice a week. My other one is on health and wellness, called the Good Sugar Podcast. Comes out every Monday, and we're opening up our first location of a store on 3rd Avenue and 69th Street. It'll be open before the end of the month as we're taping this.
Good God, as if you don't have enough spare time eating up in your life, you're going to be a business owner on top of it in a food industry?
Small percentage.
Oh, of course, okay.
The Gas Digital Network, which has now 22 shows, 35 hours of entertainment every week.
Wowie zowie. Guttingthesacredcow at gmail.com if you want to advertise with us or to say hi. And please leave us that 5-star rating, 2 or 3 sentence review on your podcast platform of choice. And head on over to Gutting the Sacred Cow to grab yourself some sweet merch, hats, mugs, bags, cell phone holders, whatever. It's there. GuttingTheSacredCow.com, GuttingTheSacredCow at gmail.com. David, the producer, let's let you out and let's have you pop that bleach jean jacket collar of yours with 85 band pins all over it while you pull out something from Spencer's Gifts you just got at the mall and gut the sacred cow.
Okay, before I gut, I want to ask you both one question. And do you know the tagline of this movie?
No.
No.
She's got everything going for her. He's going for her with everything he's got.
That's very long. No wonder why it didn't stick out.
It's
a lengthy subtitle.
Like the movie.
Oof.
The movie's only 100 minutes. That's not that long.
You know what? For a movie in the 90s, no. It's just a little over 90 minutes. It wasn't a bad timing, just a bad movie. You know, and I love a lot what Cameron Crowe does. I mean, Fast Times and, of course, Almost Famous. He's got some great stuff out here. So I don't know how this turd got made, but there is not a single likable character in this movie. Every kid in this movie is devoid of any emotion at all. I mean, John Cusack pretty much plays the same part in every single movie he's in. I mean, I can just flip through every one of his movies, and even I'll even include
that is so true.
Time Machine, and he's still the same character.
Gross Point Blank and High Fidelity and this character are all the same person. Manic Rapid Talking, talking to self. He's borderline autistic. I cannot agree with you more.
Well, and you got to throw in some brooding every about 5 seconds.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I can sum up this movie by picking out the best part and picking out the worst part of this movie. So the worst part of this movie was the absolute lame sex scene. I mean, who has lame sex scenes in movies in the 90s? I mean, they were scorching hot back then in a lot of cases. This one had nothing that you wanted. Him shaking uncontrollably, you know, apologizing for, you know, basically his performance or lack thereof. It was really lame.
To be fair, it is PG-13, so you're not going to get the whole full-on
fuckfest. I didn't expect full frontal. Yeah.
Well, also, by the way, I'm going to argue he's supposed to be a virgin. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be in love with her. Right. I'm sorry you've lost your teenage awe and wonder, but I could relate to the idea of being so obsessed with a girl, finally getting to fuck her and being emotional about it. I'm sorry you're a cold, heartless bastard.
Wow.
Yeah. I lost my virginity at 12. That ship sailed, man. I just,
you know. Good God. What babysitter did your parents use?
She was awesome, by the way. I was a 2-pump chump the first time around, though. Boy, that wasn't a good day for me. But
I have to ask. No,
that's
12.
He didn't have time to shiver. He was done before it even started.
I've seen sneezes last longer. David, how the hell did that happen?
It was a keg party that I wasn't supposed to be at for obvious reasons. It was a girl that I went to school with previously up until sixth grade, and then she went to a Catholic girls school after that. We ran into each other at a party. She was the one who initiated it. She was the one who brought me upstairs in a parent's bedroom, and then it was not great. It was not great.
How much, never great.
No. Sorry. On SDR, we ask everybody about their first sexual experience. They're never great, so that's fine. And that, by the way, makes it that scene in the movie make even more sense.
How much older was she?
3 years.
Wow.
She was 15. I was 12.
Jesus wow. Christ. Peaking before you have a license to drive. God damn. You
know, she ruined me for life, dude.
at least now I know why you're so bitter.
Yeah. All right. Continue, sir.
So I talked about the worst part of that movie, but the best part of the movie was watching John Cusack getting kicked in the face Absolutely. That there was nothing to cheer for in this movie. It was a love story that I just didn't care about either one of them being in love. And I don't even think they made it believable at all. It was really tough watching it. And I got to go back, because every time that I email you and I give you a movie, right, Kevin, I say to myself, I know I'm giving myself homework, but I feel now worse for this movie because I had to make you two watch it again as well. And that just seems unfair.
Actually really enjoyed it. I was not, so I haven't seen it since it came out. I saw it in the theaters in 89. Wow. And I've not watched it again. It's not a movie that's on TV often. You know, it doesn't pop up that often. And I was surprised at how much I did enjoy it. What I would say is that the B plot of her father getting arrested for that had really no consequence in the movie, though it didn't matter. That story brought nothing to the table either way. In a way, I guess it shows that she's a little flawed also, or her family's a little flawed. She's not as perfect as everyone wants to think she is, but that meant nothing to me, that's that subplot. But I thought it was a really good, iconic high school experience for the 80s.
Keep going, yes. Dave. Let's see.
Let me pick that up. that went kind of right over my head of being, a good love story or a good teenage story. But, you know, his biggest accomplishment in the movie was getting that first date. The whole movie was set up within the first like 15, 20 minutes that he had to get this date. And it was so important to him to get the date. And then what's he do when he gets the date? He accepts the role of party key master and essentially ditches her the whole party. That made no sense to me. I'm like, if I finally got a date with a girl that I really liked, I would absolutely be there spending time with her, getting to know her, you know, maybe take her upstairs in a room, embarrass myself after 2 seconds, you know, things like that.
Can I counterpoint that?
Sure.
So because she obviously did not want to go out with him when he calls her. First of all, I like the message behind it, take your shot, which is a great idea. You never know what will happen. Even when the guy asks him, how did you do it? He goes, I just called her. She said no 12 times. When he finally suggests they just go as like friends and go, he did it right by pulling back. If he was obsessive right away, she wouldn't be interested. The part that made me laugh is what she said to John Mahoney, the father, I'll have your daughter for the next 8 hours. I was like, 8 hours?
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
that was crazy. Thing.
I'd be like, how about we cut that in about eights and you'll have her back in an hour, you creep.
Yeah. And the weird part was that first date, this dad's obviously over obsessive with her. You can tell immediately. And I'll get into that in just a moment. But he doesn't mind her spending overnight with this guy out of nowhere. And it just seemed a little off.
Very much off. Exactly. She led a sheltered life. He's like, 8 hours? No sweat. See when the newspaper guy's throwing the paper on the front porch. Like, that doesn't happen.
And your daughter is the headline.
Right. I would say, I'm going to play counterpoint here because I want to show why this movie makes sense to me. If you have a daughter that has never done anything wrong, she's always at the top of the class. She's doing everything right. The one time she wants to go out and party, maybe you give her a little fucking leeway.
That's a lot of fucking leeway, Ralph. Obviously, you don't have kids.
I don't have kids. I do not.
I have a 7-year-old. Jesus Christ. I was a wild guy younger. But hey, when her date comes to go out, like, hey, be back by 2. That's pretty.
That was a little weird. Eight hours was a little weird. That was weird.
That's a shift at the local mill.
It's a shift. Okay, let's get into Creepy Jim. We got it because we all know it's part of the movie. So the first creepy thing that he does is he gives, the car is fine. You know, that's a graduation gift. I get that. A lot of kids get, a car for their graduation gift. But her mom's, and it isn't clear if it's her wedding ring or not, but he puts it on her wedding finger.
Oh.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
I didn't catch that either.
It's rough. Oh, yeah. And as a graduation present, I could see if he gave her a ring for like a wedding present or something. But as a graduation gift, I don't know. Creepy Jim's starting to creep in. They're constantly kissing hello and goodbye. She calls her dad at the party and other places. And then here.
And she's not even Italian either. That's the weird part.
By the way, I had to call my mom my whole life. If I went anywhere, I had to call my mom when I got there.
Uh-huh.
It was part of it. And I had to call her if I was going to be late. And it was a single parent. So maybe that makes sense to me. If it didn't make sense to you,
gone are the days of carrying pocket change. You use that at a payphone, like, all right, I'm here. Or, all right, come pick me up in front of the movie theater or at the arcade or whatever.
These were the days of latchkey kids, though. Yeah. I mean, you were just out all the time. You know, I just didn't kind of buy that. But the this doesn't happen moment.
Yes,
is when she tells her dad about having sex with Lloyd. Who tells their father, who, what girl tells their father? Now, a boy, I could see, but what girl tells her father that she had sex with a boyfriend?
One that kisses her in the mouth openly, often.
I don't disagree. And why is it that Joan Cusack has to be in every single John Cusack movie?
Stole that from me. Damn it.
Uncredited, though. Uncredited. Yeah. Just walked on. Just once, a couple of scenes.
A couple of scenes with zero chemistry. I'm not convinced they're related. I think that she's got like pictures of him or something. Because they're in way too many movies together. The only thing they have in common is bad acting chops. That's it. That's it. The scene in the 7-Eleven parking lot, and when she's telling her sob story about her parents separating, Lloyd stops her mid-story, tells her not to step on the broken glass on the concrete, walks her around the glass, and then she continues with the story. There was absolutely no reason for that scene at all. If they were going into some symbolic bullshit, you know, like the glass represents her broken childhood, that's probably even more lame. But then fast forward and she tells that same shitty story to her dad.
All right.
And it's- told him, he makes me feel safe. That was the whole purpose for that scene.
It's not like he draped his large overcoat over a puddle and held her hand as he helped over and said, Madame shall not sully the bottom of her shoes on such swill or something like that.
I do see there's a lot of 80s pacing in this movie, right? And if I watch movies sometimes now from other countries, like if you watch a movie that's big in Russia right now or big in other that are a little bit behind the times, they feel like 80s movies because they're still trying to figure out the pacing. And that definitely is a victim in this movie, but I don't hold that as a negative. The storytelling is a little off because we were still relatively new in the world of big budget. And that doesn't bother me at all. It didn't bother me at all.
No.
Yeah, but John Hughes developed this formula, and I think a lot of other people copy that. So they know the pacing, the tempo, all that stuff.
Right.
They already had that down to a fine science. I don't know if I agree with that.
Until that they have to introduce the one stupid element in every 80s and 90s movie, which
is... Oh, don't you say it. Don't you say it. I know what you're going to say.
The montage.
Oh, I was going to say something else. Okay.
No, the montage. So
I love montages, damn it. Especially shopping ones, like Pretty Woman. That's a great one.
There's a cheap and easy way to progress the story, basically, that they know that they don't have enough time to tell the story, so they just speed up a bunch of parts and add a little soundtrack to it, and then you get shit done. I think the montage is, thank God that's not in movies anymore. It's the worst trope in movies.
There's still training montages. You'll do that in fighting movies. You'll see those.
Hell yeah. Bloodsport, best one ever.
Sometimes, yeah. I guess you're right. I guess they still do use the
Creed.
The
it was trope. In Creed. I just saw watched one of the first Creeds. It was in that. And that's not that old of a movie.
Guys, how about Revenge of the Nerds when they were finding a house and painting it and building it up? And that's one of the best goddamn montages ever.
This montage, all they do is make out. That's it. There's different scenes of them making out. There's like three different cut scenes of them making out, and then it's over. And you go, we needed that to be a montage? I don't think we did.
Well, the other montage is them breaking up is another montage, right? That's in there also. Because the
stereo
thing is part of the we're not in a relationship anymore montage.
Right. And I've got John Cusack sad face montage. Yes.
By the way, Better Off Dead is a John Cusack movie, and that's one of my favorite movies of all time. So
I hate that film.
That's so rough.
It got me into Van Halen. That movie got me into Van Halen.
It, well,
One good thing came out of it.
Yeah,
that's always synonymous with that movie. That made me love Van Halen.
I would argue it's that goddamn quote that I absolutely despise. $2. I want my $2. I mean, I hate when people throw that out there. Not a fan. Sorry. Go ahead, Dave.
No, that's okay. And then she breaks up with him, and he says he knows and hangs out with too many girls. What guy says that? I hang out with too many girls.
Liars.
Unless you're a guy that hangs out with too many girls and lets one break your heart. It's the worst setup ever. Because he's got three girlfriends. Well, three friends that are girls, I should say. And then, of course, the girlfriend. The three friends that are girls, they weren't doing him any favors. They were just had the worst advice, just like the guys did. So he was just hanging out with assholes that just couldn't help him. That's what
I think that was the point, by the way.
Yeah,
that was the whole point of that scene, is that he says he realizes his girls are giving him bad advice, and then he goes to see the guys, and the guys give him bad advice. So that's what the whole idea was. Do what you want to do. Do what feels right to you is what I took from that.
Well, then,
hangs out with assholes.
Well, that's every guy, though. Every guy had in their circle of friends or secondary circle, those two or three guys who had all the advice in the world, but when it came to a body count of women they've slept with, it always add up to one at most.
Mm-hmm. And between the two of them.
Exactly.
There's only one scene in this movie that I laughed out loud, and that was when the dad's credit card gets declined, and then the next scene he cuts to fully clothed in the bathtub in the fetal position.
That was great.
Yep.
I know I wasn't supposed to be laughing. It wasn't built for that, but that scene was hysterical.
I laughed my balls off too. I said, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Also, why the bathroom? It makes sense. And why in the actual bathtub?
I know.
Like, if you're going to go in the bathroom and no one, it'd be different if he was naked and the water was running.
Right.
But he just sitting in the bathtub, which makes absolutely no sense. I agree with that.
With a razor blade and Sarah McLachlan playing in the background, completely get you. I understand, but you're right. He's in there business casual in the tub, just chilling out. No water. The fuck?
And, you know, of course, everyone knows the pivotal scene. We talked about it, the 4 seconds long. He's got the boombox, you know, over his head. When I remember seeing that scene the first time in the movie, I thought it was longer, too. I thought it was like a lot longer. But it immediately made my sphincter tighten when I watched it. I'm like, oh, this is worse than I remember it. This is like some guy just like stalking his girlfriend that has nothing to do or wanting nothing to do with him. So I'm like, oof, that's a little rough.
It's also, I thought in my hindsight that scene was a pivotal scene to get her to come back to him, but it's not. That was surprising.
Yep. I think we all had the Mandela effect in that part of the movie.
For sure.
Agreed.
Yeah. And there was no real reason why Lloyd went to go see her dad at the jail at the end. Now, because he said that Diane was in the car and she wasn't coming out, and that was her intent, was to stay in the car. The only thing was to maybe give him the letter, but he asked for like his permission or told him the whole story of how he's going to Europe with her for the school. And it's just going to do nothing but piss him off. So he really had no reason to be there other than just to hand him a letter.
I think that because he said that she was going to go in originally and then she decided not to. And that's why he went in. So I think that's fine. That doesn't bother me at all.
Hmm.
Yeah, I thought it was also maybe to kind of throw in his face just a little bit. Kind of like, after all that you've said and done, and here I am, I'm going to go away with her to England. And here you are in orange jumpsuit.
And by the way, that ending with the two of them on the plane and the ding and it going to black was super memorable. I remembered that from 30 something years ago.
I just watched it last night, and I already forgot that. That's how
it was a great ending when they said when the seatbelt light comes on.
I thought it was like a Sopranos ending.
Then we're all
I thought
good.
It was like.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
I thought it was awful because he's like, okay, just wait for it. Wait for it. Wait for it. Wait for it. Ding. Go to black. I'm like, oh, I forgot how stupid that was.
The sweet ending gives you hope. They're going to be good, those kids.
That's the thing. They didn't give me anything to really care if they did or didn't. I never got emotionally attached to them as a couple.
I thought she was great. She was such a perfect, like, high school girl, dream girl. She really was. So pretty and natural.
I thought that she smiled at inappropriate times. I think she was a little creepy like her dad.
Oh, there you go.
I agree. She was like that high. She was high school hot, but not like a porn star. Exactly. Not porn star. Like, how the hell, like, Denise Richards in Wild Things was in high school? Fuck out of here. Although I thoroughly enjoyed her. Don't get me wrong. That's definitely a top five moment for me. But you're right. High school hot, believably hot, but not over the top. Like, this bitch doesn't belong here. Who are we kidding?
Right. And he was the quirky outsider guy wearing the stupid Cure t-shirts that nobody was like, what the fuck are you doing with this guy? I got it all. I can get it. I liked it.
David,
yeah, I just couldn't connect with it. Yeah, I couldn't connect with it because every time I see John Cusack in a movie, he takes me out of it because I know he's going to play the same damn part every single time.
Hold on. I have
to worry too much about that.
Maybe. I have the exception to the rule. Ready? Two words. Con Air.
I'd have to go back and rewatch that one. It's been a hot minute.
It's fucking great. Still is.
Good movie.
Yeah, man. David, is that all your notes? You got more?
That's it. Other than I had the same IRS subplot that is completely unnecessary and didn't really move the story forward. And it really just made his dad or her dad just look like an asshole and there was no need for it.
Right. Give me a number 1 to 10.
4.5.
Okay. Didn't hate this much as Dirty Dancing or other ones that you've done.
Oh, God, no. No, I can't even watch that one.
Ralph Sutton, you've tipped your hand pretty heavily here, but go ahead, throw in the rest of your notes.
I'm going to add some cool things, little things about this movie that made me like it even more, right? First of all, it is Cameron Crowe's directorial debut. I didn't realize that it's his first film, right? Frasier's dad is in it, John Mahoney, but also Frasier's wife is in it briefly, Bebe Neuwirth. Yes. So it's like a little mini Frasier reunion or a preview in the movie. You also have Jeremy Piven's first movie. Eric Stoltz is in it. So it's kind of packed with people that they're just starting out their careers. And that's always fun when you're watching it 35 years later to see them.
Do you know the story between Piven and Cusack?
I know he got really drunk with
Chicago guys.
Something. Right.
They were. So I think it was Piven's mom. One of their parents had an acting studio or taught an acting class.
Theater.
Right. Yep. In Chicago. Yeah, you're Chicago guy. Shit, you know. They were the best of friends for years, helping each other out, getting each other roles. And then Piven gets Entourage and, long and short, forgets Cusack ever exists. In true Piven fashion, from what I've heard.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah.
They say the term, which I always like to hear this, he says, you can say anything to me. When they say the title of a movie in a movie, you got to give him an extra point.
Boom! You son of a bitch, it's in my notes.
Gossard from Pearl Jam's in it.
Yeah.
That's fucking cool as shit, right?
Cool is, yeah.
Also, as I said earlier, Bitcher's Man is just a fucking great line. That line alone is worth giving an extra half a point for you, Dave. I'm sorry. Other little things I found out, which is it's the same dojo as they used in Karate Kid. That's fucking cool as shit. That's in there as well. And then the original idea, because you mentioned this earlier about the song, they gave it to the Smithereens to write a song. Mm-hmm. They wrote Waiting for a Girl Like You, A Girl Like You, rather, by Smithereens.
That's
and
a great song.
Cameron Crowe thought it was too on the nose, so they didn't use it. But then it ended up getting on the Smithereens record. So that's another half a point, because that's a fucking great song.
But it didn't make the movie.
Yeah.
Inspired them to put it out. That's fucking cool as shit.
You know what? I do have to address something that you brought up earlier, which was the Frasier's wife that played the counselor when she went to the party. What counselor, high school counselor, goes to a high school party?
A fucking cool as shit one. That's the answer, right?
Yeah. One who's fucking at least five of the dudes about to graduate.
Exactly.
That's who.
Exactly. Yeah.
Love it. That's why I should give another extra point. Fucking A, man. Hot Pepe Newirth in her 20s.
I'll never forget my senior prom, my marketing teacher. He was slick as shit, and there was rumors of him banging some of the students. He shows up. I'm talking about at my prom, and we're bullshitting, and the smoke show when I was a freshman, she was a senior, walks into my senior prom, again, 4 years later. I go, is that Andrea so-and-so? He goes, yeah. He was like, hey, goatee, I'll see you later. I'm like, you son of a bitch.
You know, my high school principal had to leave because he fucked one of the students.
No.
Yeah.
I had a gym teacher. Same thing. Yeah. Had to go.
Oh, it's an epidemic, but the best one ever. Ralph, what other notes do you have?
I just feel that, again, I really related to it in understanding the high school experience, especially I had a Diane Court. I had a girl that I was fucking crazy about. I finally got the balls to ask her to prom, and I was just asking. And then some other dude, we were at like a senior getaway, and then she was about to, like, I asked her, she goes, let me, yeah, I think so. And then some other dude came up and just got drunk with her, started making out with her, and I never got to take her to prom. So I saw Lloyd as a finished version of what I almost accomplished, and that I felt I could relate to it, and made me happy that someone had that experience.
Ralph, yeah, you're not looking at this objectively at all.
No, not at all.
See, now she's with that guy who polishes, you know, rims over at the tire center, but Ralph owns a goddamn podcast network, so yeah. She chose poorly.
She chose poorly, yeah, she that's did. For sure. Now, I, and by the way, in not seeing it in 30-something years, I turned it on yesterday thinking, oh, this is going to be rough, but let me see if it holds up. And I was like, oh, you know what? This was fucking enjoyable. It was a fun movie because it was only about 96 minutes long or something. It goes right by relatively quickly. I thought that Diane Court, Iona, whatever her name is.
Iona Sky.
Nailed being the unobtainable, perfect high school girl perfectly. And also, what's her name? Pamela Adlon's in it. And she's awesome. And she went on to a great career. Mm. It stacked the cast with a lot of people who went on to other things. So for all those different reasons, I'm solidly behind this move.
Give me a number, 1 to 10.
8.
Whoa!
Whoa!
Yeah. By the way, so Iona
bringing me back.
Boy, that girl really must have broke your heart.
Yeah.
Bring me back to those happy days. That's all it is.
So this is all nostalgia-based fuel. This is not based on the actual merits of the film. That's what I smell out of this argument.
Yep.
By the way, do you know who Iona Sky's first husband was?
Oh, yeah. Anthony Kiedis from the Chili Peppers.
Wrong. Adam Horowitz. Beastie Boys.
Sorry, but she was dating Anthony Kiedis during this movie, and that's why Chili Peppers are in the movie.
Yeah. But crazy. She's married Adam Horowitz.
That's cool. Boys.
Filmed she's in LA, supposed to be Seattle.
We got an 8 and we got a 4. Well, let's find out where this man's reviews come from. Notes! I must have been the only one who did not have goofy shit happen at their high school graduation, because every high school graduation you see in films, something silly happens. The only thing we had happen at mine was one girl, her name was Gay Charles, but take a guess on how much hazing she received for 4 years, to the point where she had to change her name from Gay Charles to Renita Charles. And of course, when she walked down the aisle to get her diploma, we all yelled out, Gay Charles.
That's great.
That's it. You guys have
You're such a child.
What do you want? What did you guys have anything special happen at your graduations, or are they just boring as shit as usual?
My high school was fucking huge. There was over 1,000 people in the graduating class.
Oof.
So it was kind of short, because you didn't walk out one at a time. They just said, all right, everybody, you're officially graduated. They didn't read out anybody's names at all.
Oh my God. They got an assembly line. That stinks. Yeah. David, you?
Only one thing, and it was unfortunately me who was involved. So I decided that it would be a good idea, because I thought it would be funny. Hindsight's 2020, to drop my pants as I was accepting my diploma.
Attaboy, that's a David I know.
Yeah.
Did you wear those cop mirrored sunglasses on stage on your ass as well?
No,
I did not. Did you show your ass to the audience?
I did. I pulled up the back of the robe and showed, and I got I had to go to summer school for that summer because they decided to remove some credits from me, and I ended up graduating late.
No wonder you hate all these high school based movies.
Yeah.
It makes so much more sense now.
But you left
I
the
love
part
my
out
high school.
You left the part out where you wrote Magna Cum Louder on your ass crack, though. above your ass crack. Next one. I highly doubt that any white guys are ever allowed to sing Whitney Houston songs in public ever. Stop that. No one's buying that. You're not allowed to if you're a white guy. Cut the bullshit. High school graduation is one of the most videotaped things that no one ever rewatches, unless someone trips while getting their diploma, or if the valedictorian drops a racial slur, or if you're David the producer, you show your ass on stage. By the way, you guys missed the best song. I'm shocked. I thought this was going to go right up your alley. How dare none of you catch that? It's Crown of Thorns by Mother Love Bone in the background, which is recycled in Singles. Horrible film. Soundtrack is top 10 of all time. Top 20 of all time, I'll say. If John Cusack really loved that nephew of his, he cut that goddamn mullet right off. That was just... I couldn't stop staring at that and getting
angry.
Adorable,
by the way. He was adorable, that kid.
He was adorable. He was very much of the Jerry Maguire kind of kid-ish feel, but that mullet just kept like grabbing me like, enough. Like, okay, if you don't cut that mullet off, you're guaranteed to be a frozen food manager at a supermarket for the rest of your years. That's what that says to me. Iona Sky looks like she was 31 years old when this film came out. I looked it up. She was 18.
Yeah, I was like, 18. You bite your tongue. She was hot as shit in that movie.
She was, but she did not look. She was 31. She looked old. But listen, those Brits, most of them, age like seafood in the sun, unless, of course, it's Elizabeth Hurley, Kate Beckinsale, or Rachel Weisz. All verified smoke shows. Joan Cusack and Maggie Gyllenhaal lost the genetics war in the brother-sister acting family.
Oh, did they?
But let's be fair, Patricia Arquette best David Ray, Brandy destroys Ray J, and Journey beats Jussie Smollett in the looks and false lawsuit department as well.
What about Justin and Jason Bateman?
Damn it, I forgot about that. I got to say Jason Bateman.
Jason wins that one.
Oh, yeah. Please, hands down.
Hands down.
This isn't the most awkward phone call you've ever heard for a date. I wish we could have videotaped or audio recorded all of us as 16-year-olds calling girls on the phone. You would have had shivers go up your fucking buttholes if you would have heard me call for dates. More cringy than Joe Biden trying to rap. But the worst documented phone call for a date in a film, without question, fellas, is Swingers. Favreau. Oh, that'll, as a dude, you go, oh man, don't do it. Just stop. Oh, come on. Where's your value and self-appeal? Kickboxing is a sport of the future, he says. If they rebooted this movie today, it would be an autistic kid saying that e-gaming is the sport of the future.
And they'd both be right.
I love seeing the random black guy at the party with a Jerry curl. Simpler times, and thank God the white kids did not ask him to break dance on cardboard at this party.
I thought the same thing as they were doing the pan by with him in the crowd shot. I'm like,
Here comes some popping and locking kids. They're gonna do the old stereotypes up.
I may have brought this up, but I as a former breakdancer, I was in one of the breakdancing movies called Crush Groove when I was a kid.
No way!
You're in Crush Groove.
I was in Crush Groove, For the I got hired to be in the movie breakdancing. The scene got cut, but I was picked out of it. I used to breakdance for money in the streets of New York City when I was a kid, and we got picked to be in the movie.
I guess someone saw Electric 2, Electric Boogaloo 85 times in the theater.
I have if you buy the woman who wrote the song, I Believe in the Beat, the soundtrack of Breaking 2, she had another song called 99 and a half. And on her album, it says, thanks to Ralph and Joe Sutton for my breakdance lessons.
What the hell is going on? Where I get all these gems about Ralph dropped every time we hang out. That's hilarious. I will say this house party is much more believable than a lot of these house parties you see in teenage films, especially John Hughes films, where kids are just doing this shit that no one did. John Hughes films, they're toilet papering the house by at random. Biker gangs crashing through the house like Weird Science, Shut Up, or the worst, and I just still annoys me. 16 Candles, someone puts a full goddamn pizza on the turntable. Fuck you. No one wastes pizza. No one did that. That doesn't happen.
And by the way, it was realistic also because he said no one ever helps me clean up this party.
100%.
Great that was in there. Adds a little more realism.
Eric's, love Eric Stoltz. Second
realism, no more entertainment value though.
made me feel like I was there, Dave. What can I tell you?
Hey everyone, it's Jeremy Piven with hair and pre-sexual harassment charges. It looks like Silent Bob stole the Lloyd Dobler overcoat look. That and guys who expose themselves at bus stations look. Here's a hybrid. Iona Sky looks like Nancy from Nightmare on Elm Street and Reese Witherspoon.
Ooh, I think you nailed it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's one of those insanely talents I have that it can never be monetized. Yet another high school party and no one's fucking. That is bullshit. Someone is always getting jerked off in a closet at the very minimum. Stop it. I never felt the need to grab a chalkboard and write Kevin presents XYZ movie while showing a movie to my friends like Lloyd did. Lloyd presents Cocoon. What the fuck is this? This is nonsense. Well,
and what was that scene even about? It was about nothing. It was like they tried to make a gag out of it. Yes, we're showing old people a movie about old people.
Right.
That was about as funny as it got. And I'm like, this scene does nothing.
Are we trying to build sympathy for the people that he's eventually ripping off? If so, didn't work.
Yeah. I also had to look up what year Cocoon came out because I was surprised.
88.
Yeah, it was 1 year before. So it's cool that it actually got mentioned so closely after that came out. That's pretty wild.
Actually, they're really stretching to find cool things about this movie, aren't you, Ralph?
I will go on a limb and say that Cocoon was probably in the theater when they were filming, as the rule usually is. They film a year and it comes out a year later. And yet another talent that is completely useless and unmonetizable for me, where I know the year of movies and when they come out. I can just spout it out like fucking Rain
Man. I wonder
if
it was probably the same production company, I would imagine, right? That's probably why it got plugged.
Good question. Damn it. Wasn't it? I know who the production company was because it was someone well known. It wasn't this. I don't think it was the same. We can look at that up in a moment. Hey, how many dumb dildos played in your eyes while in the back seat with the lady because they figured if it works for the Q's, it's got to work for me?
I mean,
sure many.
To this day.
Speaking of, I have a class action lawsuit against John Hughes' estate for making me go through all these charades thinking that that's what women wanted back in the 80s and 90s, and Kevin with his bat on his shoulders striking viciously out as a teenager. Thanks, dickheads.
Yeah, and why didn't anyone write the parody In My Thighs? I'm just checking.
Weird Al, missed that one.
Yeah, missed that one.
Minute 51, David, this is what I thought you were going for. Minute 51 in, and they work the title of the movie into the dialogue. The 80s and 90s unnecessarily shoehorn those titles in. No bigger victim than, of course, Steven Seagal by saying, you know, I'll be out for justice. And same thing, I'll just say anything. I'm watching with my wife, for fuck's sakes, and I throw my pad in the air.
That was a whole thing on Family Guy where they made a list of every movie that said it. So it fucking makes me happy when I hear that.
The nostalgia bell clanks so hard for Ralph Sutton. God bless you. Lloyd is a lot less creepy from Ducky and Pretty in Pink, but doing the note to self bit in his cassette recorder is a bit much. Why? Are you going to play a mixtape of the best of Lloyd before he dies of autoerotic asphyxiation? Probably not.
In a world
where
we don't
have
notepads.
All was a belt around his neck.
Yeah. David Carradine, table of one. Or Michael Hutchins.
Nowadays, you would just open up your Google Notes and write something down. So I get it. He might be listening back to it later to see what he was thinking about. I got no problem with it.
Ralph, you are a glass half full kind of guy.
Oh, he is. Surprise, John Mahoney doesn't do what everyone is told when their credit card has been rejected, and that's yell at them to run it three more times to blame covering up for the embarrassment.
By the way, I enjoyed that scene immensely because he really thought he was trying to make moves on that girl. That girl was hot, too, for a little woman. She was great. Yeah. And the other guy watching on is like, oh, look at you, man. You're going to make this happen. That was great. It was a good scene.
Did any of you two have the audacity or stupidity, I should say, to stand outside of a house of a girl you liked and play a song just because of this film?
Never.
Never did that.
Ralph, you paused for a second, man.
No, I think one of my friends did something much worse when a girl broke up with him. It's not me. It was one of my best friends. He went over to the house and he nailed dead roses to her door.
Oh, funny you say that, because my next note, standing outside of a house and blaring out song How Juvenile. Everyone knows you make a mixtape, tape it to a dead squirrel and put it in her mailbox and then carve her name into your arm. Duh. Here's another problem I have with this film. Why doesn't John Mahoney pay for that luggage with all the cash that he has in the house? Are you shitting me?
Great point. Why
two
would
credit
you
cards
credit?
He fills. He's got Biggie Small stacks of cash in that credenza. Yet he's worried about a
granny
credit card
cash
closet.
For days.
Right.
Yeah. Really loosely based. All that part you really never really. It's just it's a such a nonsensical B story that didn't need to be in there.
Next point. This is a weird avenue to go down with dad committing Medicare fraud, for Christ's sakes. This is like the rape angle with the oldest daughter and Uncle Buck. But hey, at least there are laughs 45 seconds later. Not in this film. This could not be any whiter of a crime except robbing an art gallery. Ione Sky.
It was on brand.
Yeah. At least it what?
At least it was on brand. He was a very white guy. It's a very white film. It's a very white crime.
Oh, my God. The whitest of white. Well, then again, when you're in Seattle, what the hell do you expect? Except the only thing missing was seeing Lane Staley walk down the street with a needle hanging out of his arm. R.I.P. Lane. God damn, I love them. Next one. Keymaster. You said this before, David. The last thing I would do as a teenager is accept the responsibility of holding a bag of keys when I bring the hottest girl to a party where every wolf is out trying to pick her up and bang her. I am covering her like the fucking Secret Service on top of the president, for Christ's sake. I am not letting her out of my sight. I am doing everything in my power to get her drunk and possibly have sex and get drunk myself. But to be the role of a social protectorate, that doesn't happen.
It shows that he is a protector, and that's why he protected her with the glass. It's on brand for him.
Oh, well, you are reaching like Inspector Gadget on that.
You know
one.
What? Yeah, Ralph is my new favorite person. I love that he just finds the really just, you know, what he grasps onto in the movie. And you know what? I got to hand it to you, Ralph. I understand why you personally love this movie. I think it's people like Kevin and myself.
I'm not there yet. You
bitter guys. What can I tell you? Bitter, bitter men.
Says the guy who hated Avengers Endgame. I'll say that's you. Ralph, are you on Cameron Crowe's payroll? Did I miss? Is he coming on SDR? Is he the mystery guest?
I will say
week?
Again, I went into this yesterday thinking I wasn't going to enjoy the film.
Right.
Yeah. So I had a mind of that.
All right.
Next week, you're going to see Cameron Crowe on Gas Digital.
Without a doubt. Ione Sky is wearing a hat on the plane that even Blossom would have said, Christ, that's ugly. Take that off.
It also looked weird that she was able to sit with her head against the seat with that big brim of the hat. That was weird.
I thought the same thing. Like, she had to be perfectly, like, just – and she never tilted or moved her head
either.
Yeah,
it had to be. She probably couldn't have moved, I imagine.
That was from years going to finishing school with books on her head to have perfect posture. Oh, here's something my wife noticed, actually. I get my wife credit for this. When they're on the plane, did you notice how large those seats were in coach? Holy shit. I'm sitting there going, I don't need to pay for extra leg room for once. Christ, I'm 6'2". Ralph, you're taller than
I am. As a man who's 6'6", I understand that, you know? Yeah. But I did remember that is what it used to be. Uh-huh. So that's the good old days. I do remember that.
Remember the days when people complained about airline food? Now you have to pay to get shitty airline food. So there.
Yeah.
The whole meeting with the dad in jail was just meh. I thought it would have had way more gravitas besides him just handing the pen back like, oh, here you go. Get it? All right, subtlety. Like the sledgehammer to the balls. We get it. This film is completely unremarkable. I didn't laugh. I smirked. Actually, I laughed a couple of times with the kids at the Sip and Sop, whatever the hell it's called. Jeremy Piven is an annoying character as usual. I love him in Entourage, I will say. In teen rom-coms, here's my problem. There are always at least two memorable characters. It's not Jeremy Piven. It's not Eric Stoltz. It's not Lily Taylor. Who the fuck is it? This film is one memorable scene, and as you both said, 4 seconds. Couldn't believe. I thought it was a whole. You're exactly right. I thought it was a 5-minute montage at best. And here we go, 4 seconds. It's known for that one scene. Who's running around saying, "Man, say anything, boy, does that hold muster?" No one. No one. I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it, but I sure was not entertained. I do not know for the life of me why this is so beloved. How are people making the case for entertained? I get it. It hits nostalgia notes, Ralph Sutton. I understand. And like I said, this is not a master class in how to land the hot chick in school, fellas. For all you kids, like, let's go. I'm an old soul. Let's watch 80s movies and 90s movies to figure out how to get girls. No, stop yourself. Save yourself time. Just go on app. It's a lot easier. Because you know what? These movies put me in the friend zone way more than that sexually confused kid who was in chorus class through high school and then went to college and learned he was gay.
Well, you know, when I saw him, you know, drop some tears, John doesn't know how to act with cry. He tried to cry in that scene and couldn't do it.
You talking about the sex scene?
No, not the sex scene. No, no. When she broke up with him.
Oh, she broke up with him. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. He was making the sounds of his throat like he was going to, or like he's going to cry.
The way, I did feel that was a pretty believable scene in that she broke up with him in a way where it didn't even seem like she was breaking up with him because she didn't know what she wanted either. So she was just doing what her father wanted. I found that scene believable.
But what made it ridiculous is that she just turns her head to the window, goes like this and goes, I'm just going to ignore him now.
Yeah. She was embarrassed.
You don't know how to deal with your your emotions at that age.
But then she realized, I'm so embarrassed. I nailed a gork who's shivering like a fucking squirrel in the winter time. Again, everyone, I don't know about you, but my first moments after my first intercourse was just, and this going through all the people in my mind, I couldn't wait to run home and call and tell them I just lost my virginity too. That's what it was for me. More of like, oh, thank God. Oh.
I barely got the I'm sorry out before I started calling my buddies.
Yeah. As David Sells says, what usually comes after the first time you come so fast? How about a back massage? Oh, it'll come back, I promise.
To play devil's advocate, by the way, I'm sure all three of us across the board did not nail our high school love.
No,
the girl that we dreamed to be with as our first sexual experience.
Definitely
so
not.
None of us are right to answer that question.
We're just going to play a game called What If.
Just saying.
I give this a 4.5 out of 10. Ugh, no love for this whatsoever. It's better than some of those John Hughes ones. John Hughes, like I said before, love and hate. I hate the Molly Ringwald trilogy. That's what it comes down to. His other stuff is great. Critics, 5-star reviews. Cameron Crowe's graduation speech homilies are given an effervescent sincerity by John Cusack. Word soup. What the fuck are you saying? Say anything.
That made no sense.
Thank you. If you think that was bad, here's another one. Say Anything was a singularly three-dimensional teen romance after a decade of broad gags and breakfast club stereotypes in John Hughes land. Actually, that makes more sense. I'll buy that.
It makes sense, but I don't agree with it.
Fair.
I like Breakfast Club.
I hate it so much.
See,
Guys,
Club is it's an 80s movie I can enjoy.
Guys, he smokes pot and then starts running around like he's on fucking PCP and punches his hand through a glass window on pot.
Maybe
enough.
He was laced with something. You don't know.
Yeah. Then why is everybody else not running like a maniac?
He was just angry. He's just an angry man.
Oh, I hate that film. Next. God, I hate it. Even though there are some unexpected leaps in the plot, the emotional genuineness wins out. Does it?
No, it doesn't. Not in my book.
What makes Crowe's film worth seeing is the writer's care in developing characters into situations of infinitely greater credibility than those which litter 99% of today's adolescent screen romances.
Disagree.
Yeah. What screen?
I think it came out at a time. Here's what I think. I think when it came out, it was a lot of nonsense, and it was the first one to try and give a little backstory and a little care. So that's why it did so well. Makes sense.
I will say that is probably the one piece of credit I'll give this movie is that it differentiated against the previous movies on how they handled teen, you know, love, right. Teen
Fair.
Romance.
Right. Again, see John Hughes. That's default. Amazon 1-star review. This is an iconic role for John Cusack and easily one of the movies that made him such a respectable actor today. Repeat, that was a critics 1-star review and the only critics 1-star on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
Drop it to 98%, not 100%?
I will assume so.
Wow.
Amazon 5-star reviews. One of the reasons we Gen X women probably have unrealistic relationship expectations would be this movie and others like it, but it's still one of my favorites. Who can forget the boombox scene? Signed, Juliet Miranda.
See, there you go. You know, people remembering it for a 4-second scene that we all thought was much more pivotal.
Yeah, there is a chance a lot would know the infamous boombox part of the movie, and yeah, it would not fly today. I'm iffy about it. There are worse things out there, but don't let that keep you from seeing this movie. It is an excellent romantic comedy worth seeing. Signed, Harvey Weinstein.
Right. Well, first of all, romantic, I will give it. Sure. Comedy, there are no freaking laughs.
It's not a comedy. It's more of a dramedy, I guess.
I don't even say that because, Raph, I looked it up on Google. I said, is this a comedy? Teenage drama.
Yeah, it's not, yes. It's not really a comedy.
Not a comedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
With
there
comedic
no
elements.
Jokes in there.
Besides the kids, that's
the
it.
Bitches,
that's
please.
It.
That was a great line. It really was a good line.
That one line and him him in the bathtub still. Yeah. That's comedy gold.
Also, by the way, funny with the scene with the kid, the father's credit card getting declined.
That
was funny. That was a good scene.
By the way, do you think Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg saw that bitches man and said, let's make a movie out of an entire character like that and call him McLovin? John Cusack. Oh, thank you. John Cusack always really has an amazing female co-star acting beside him. And Diane Court is exceptionally gorgeous, witty, and easygoing. And John Cusack plays just a regular guy just trying to get a shot at an amazing girl, which I vicariously live through. LOL. Signed, Jason Momoa. All right, that's interesting.
That's interesting.
My wife loves this, entertains, and works as advertised, and expected, most expectable.
What?
Yeah. What do you mean it works as advertised? Is this like her, is this getting her all juicy downstairs and says, all right, the Q's is on TV, and if she hears In Your Eyes, she's going to spread them. Fuck.
Yeah.
Amazon 1-star reviews. Cameron Crowe's stories are dull. The characters are flat, ridiculous, and speak like whiny robots who are trying to emulate human emotion but failing miserably. Just don't. If you haven't seen it, don't bother. If you saw it as a teen and loved it, don't rewatch it. You'll regret it.
I don't.
Add that as an addendum to my review of the show, by the way. No.
By the way, Cameron Crowe, we all know he wrote Fast Times. Boy, Fast Times, done in this very podcast. The first half is gangbusters. That second half, though, falls off a cliff.
I haven't seen that in a long time, but I did love that movie growing up. That was one of my favorites.
We all did, and we all love the certain scene, but after about minute 45, you're like, oh, it starts to, and then the jokes disappear like a fart in the wind. Next, I'm not sure what the hype is about. Horrible movie. Promotes underage drinking and premarital sex. Makes everything seem glamorous. There are so many other terrible things about this movie besides the terrible storyline and acting, but not worth my breath. Signed, Warren Beatty.
I was going to say Sister Anne Marie.
Next one. I like this one. Don't Say Anything.
I was going to rename the movie Say Anything Entertaining, and I'll watch it again.
It's almost as long as the subtitle. It was the log line it came with.
Oh, that's whoever is in marketing went to either county college or they just had some intern whip that up and go, fuck it, it's 5 o'clock on a Friday. We need to go to print.
Hey, yeah, don't worry about it. It's just a John Cusack movie.
Yeah. Mind-boggling dribble. From a director who brilliantly brought us Almost Famous, the majority of the reviewers rate this a minor classic. I found the script acting and dull and stereotyped, boring and vacuous.
I'm going to get that put on a t-shirt.
Ralph Sutton, did David the producer gut the sacred cow?
Not to me. Only I would say is that I might drop it down to a 7. Then an 8.
Ooh.
Then he did gut the sacred cow because he dropped
his
score.
The only reason why is I do feel a lot of it is nostalgia, but I do like that it wasn't marketed as a comedy. It was marketed as a teen drama. Mm-hmm. So to me, that makes sense. But I think I just came in a little hot with an 8. I just should have
been
a 7. It should have been a 7.
8 That's is all. Like 8 is.
Yeah, it should have been a 7. It had nothing to do with David. I just came in high.
Yeah. High and hot, for that matter. Yeah. David the producer, Ralph Sutton, goddamn, this is a nice little experiment in science that went perfectly. Yeah. Had a blast with you boys. Look forward to having you on again in the future. Everyone, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.